Someday, the wrong man could come along. And I wouldn't be so concerned about whether he could use these powers to perpetuate himself in office, but how he would use these powers to destroy people that disagreed with him.
I am very willing to let the American public judge my physical and mental fitness. So today, I applaud China for stepping up. I applaud Canada.
Government is not our master, it is our servant. Its only power, that which we the people allow it to have.
Liberty Watch is an independent program on KVOI dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master, and operating in the public interest for which the media in this country was designed, by exploring controversy. This helps us to resolve our differences peaceably, refining controversy into clarity through investigation, research, interview of experts, and public feedback. Liberty Watch is based in objective reason and is biased towards individual liberty, and so is not the view of the station or anyone but the host, guests, and callers. Liberty Watch operates outside the realm of political correctness, taking no notice at all of race, creed, religion, ethnicity, political affiliation, or orientation, focusing on content of character in eternal vigilance to the free flow of information about government, technology, current events, and our steadfast Constitution. The program is paid, produced, hosted, and operated by Charles Heller, and any mistakes are solely his responsibility. Responsibility, there is that word that keeps coming up. We have the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having with us Judge Phil Ginn, who will be with us in just a moment. But right now, I want to tell you who he is. He is president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary. He is a retired judge, and he's a successful businessman. But I suspect he would tell you that his largest success is being married for 42 years. Is that true?
Actually, it's 45 years now. So,
well, they need to.
Bio's a little old, Charles.
They need to send out a new bio. How about that? Congratulations.
Absolutely. I was thrilled to death to find out that if I make a mistake, it's all your fault, Charles.
So. It is. It's my responsibility. I control the vertical and I control the horizontal on this program, and you got it. And I also have a delay. So believe me, if somebody makes a mistake, it is my fault. You're 100% right. Well, you know, when Rush Limbaugh got married, Charlton Heston called into his program and he said, "Rush, I want to give you some advice from 45 years of successful marriage, and that is, you must first learn the phrase, 'I was wrong.'"
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Evidently, I didn't learn that one about 13 years ago. Oh, well. Say love you.
You know, yes, dear works pretty well too.
That's true. It's the universal solvent. So, anyway, how did you get to be the president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary?
Well, that's a very long story, Charles. We only have an hour, but I'll try to condense it down as much as we can. Most of my life, Charles, to be honest with you, has not been planned from a long time. I mean, I didn't have even a burning desire to be a lawyer when I was a young man. In fact, my dad was a Baptist preacher, and he groomed me to be a Baptist preacher. That runs in my family now through 1, 2, 3, 4 generations at least. So at any rate, I became a lawyer, and ultimately that was all I was going to do. And backed into a judgeship that came open, and some people contacted me and wanted me to take it, and then I did. And then ultimately the business opportunity opened out in Oklahoma after I had retired from the bench, and went out there. Didn't have any intent to do that, but went out there and ended up buying the company and running it for 3 years till somebody wanted to own it a whole lot more than I wanted to keep it. And in the meantime, I had had a little crisis of faith even when I was a judge starting out, and just wanted to go to the seminary to take one course, and ended up going to Southern Evangelical to take one course. That's all I was going to take to kind of firm up my faith a little bit. And was walking in the door there, and Norm Geisler, who is the founder of our seminary, was walking out. And by the time I got through talking with him, I had signed up for the Doctor of Ministry program there and ended up graduating from the seminary. So that was in, that started in 2004, I believe it was. I ended up managed to take a 3-year program and stretch it to 7 years. Graduated in 2011.
Another 37, you could have got the Moses Prize.
Absolutely. And ended up keeping contact with the seminary after that, and ultimately ended up with a stint on the board and became the chairman of the board. And we had just a little bit of a, I won't even call it a crisis, but a little blip on the screen, and they desperately needed a president, and nobody else wanted the job.
So you took it.
So I took it in order to kind of stabilize the seminary, and here I am 3 years later, still at the helm.
On foundation.
Still nobody wants it.
On foundation, I'll say, Judge Ginn, why is it that more evangelical branches of Christianity seem to be so much bigger supporters of Israel than other denominations of the faith?
For us, it's biblical. I can't tell you. You know, it's the whole concept of end times is certainly blurry. Even to those who claim it's not blurry, it is. But we know from Scripture that there will be a nation of Israel at the end times. And whether or not this nation of Israel is that nation, I can't tell you, but it does bear some resemblance to that. And so, you know, the final battle of Armageddon, according to Revelation and Daniel prophecies, is going to be fought there in the Middle East, and the forces of evil will join against the nation of Israel, whatever it looks like at that point in time. And, of course, Israel will ultimately be successful in that. Again, whether or not the nation of Israel that it, as it now exists is the nation of Israel in prophecy, I can't tell you for sure, but none of us want to take those odds that it's not.
In studio, we have with us Bunker DeFrance. Bunker is a friend of the show and also retired. He worked in the movies as a stuntman and many other capacities in a long and successful career. And he's got a question for you. Bunker, you're sure. With Phil Ginn. Go ahead.
Yeah, Judge Ginn. My question is this, that I've read the scriptures quite a bit. I love the scriptures. And I've always understood that As you said, Israel is reestablished, but as I understand it, it has to be the full land that it was back then, and not, it's still lacking some of that land. And so I'm just curious, what is your take on that particular look?
Well, I would say that the nation of Israel never was, never did take the full promised land. If you go back to the Old Testament and look at the height of the nation of Israel before it split off into Judah and Israel, it never occupied the full promised land as God had set out for them. So, you know, I do think, again, whether or not this nation, well, let me also say to you, Bunker, that scriptures also say that the nation of Israel will be living in harmony and will be serving the Lord. And there's some question as to whether that exists. Certainly they're not living in harmony, and it is a secular nation and not a religious nation. So that doesn't fit either. The point that I guess I would make on that, Bunker, is Israel has not reached her full destiny, if in fact this is the Israel of prophecy. I would have no trouble in saying that at some point in time she will occupy all of the promised land. Whether that comes before the Lord coming back or not, that's another issue.
Have you ever seen Andrew Clavin's read on this on Prager University?
I have not, Charles.
I would advise you to look it up on you're familiar with Prager University, I'm sure.
I am, yes,
yeah,
sir.
Look up Andrew Klavan on the One State Solution, and it is to give the entire Middle East to Israel, and after that there'll be peace and a lot of prosperity. Have Israel take over all the countries of the Middle East, and there won't be any more war. All right, stand by.
Well,
answer after the break, if you would. We're on our first break of the hour, quarter of the hour, and we'll be back with Judge Phil Ginn of the Southern Evangelical Seminary and your calls.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening to Liberty Watch with Charles Heller, Tucson, Arizona.
This is Herman Cain. You'll get some good bargains on the Swap Shop on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice, and have Charles make fun of your stuff.
And indeed, nearer, my God, to thee. With us is retired Judge Phil Ginn of the Southern Evangelical Seminary and a successful businessman, also retired from that. And I thought that would be an appropriate, if not a song of, shall we say, Titanic proportions.
I was just thinking that was the song they were singing on the deck of the Titanic as it went down.
The musicians were playing, yeah, Nearer, My God, to Thee.
I didn't know whether that had something to do with my interview or not.
Not yet. I got to ask you, did Christian Prince...
Before you do that, Charles, I've got to say, I have never heard of oil leakage being used in solving a crime before. And the other thing is, I'm going to come to Tucson to go to Frontier Guns. I'm sold. I'm ready to come.
Was that the one with the 1876 with the
yeah,
dust cover?
Sure,
yeah,
it
I actually went there and I recorded that with my phone. That's the actual sound of the rifle. What it sounds like with the action moving and the dust cover sliding forward. And the other one they do is, I've got a commercial where I've got 1870. But it's probably made in about 1875. Yeah, about an 1875 Colt Peacemaker. It's a first-generation low serial number Colt. And I held the gun up to my phone, to the microphone, and slowly pulled the hammer back. And, of course, Colt has those four clicks when you pull the hammer back. And I said, you've just done something Sam Colt couldn't do. He died 13 years before this gun came on the market. Come to Frontier Guns. Hold in your hand the four clicks of history. And it made a fun ad.
You know, Franklin Graham and I have been friends. We were in college together, and we have a pact that we don't tell everything that we know.
Right.
But one of the things that I was able to do for him, he collects guns, an avid gun, antique gun collector, and other things as well. But I found an old Civil War rolling block musket for him. And that's the closest thing. You don't have much of those anymore, but
nope.
I love old guns.
Yep. Lots of fun. And the other thing is, that guy that you heard about the oil, that is an original that is an original composition. That is the voices that you hear, like Johnny Dark, is the retired production director from what was Good News Media before Bustos Media acquired the radio station. And that the advertiser is Perfection Auto Works. That guy built a studio in his own house. He's so committed to doing old-time type radio commercials that, they produce their own stuff.
Bunky. I thought that was Bunky doing one of his movie impressions or something.
Mm-mm. That is the client acting as his own agency. And it's really good stuff. Anyway, back to this.
I agree.
Did Christian, by the way, that was exactly what I was hoping for this interview, is that it would be discursive. It would go in different ways that I don't control, and I love that. So feel free to do it again. Did Christian principle ever stand at odds with your ability to act in your capacity as a judge?
The answer is that it was tried on several occasions. And the problem that I had as a judge, and I haven't been a judge now for 10 years, Charles, so I retired at the end of 2014. It has gotten worse now than what it was. I was frustrated because what I saw occurring in the criminal system of our state particularly was that they were trying, as they have with education, trying to run God out of the mix. And so you couldn't actually mention God and that sort of thing from the bench. So that was frustrating for me. However, my training at Southern Evangelical Seminary is based on, to a great extent, on natural law and the practicality of Christianity and of faith in general. And so I was able to utilize that in ways that probably softened the blow of at least the stress between what the culture would allow and what I wanted to do on the bench.
By the way, I would encourage you to look on Epic TV on a series with Yanya Kalik called American Thought Leaders. There is a brilliant long interview with James Lindsay and his co-author, and the current book on the table is called The Queering of America, and it's about the way that the culture is attempting to be co-opted by people who are trying to change our children and apply what's called queer theory, which is a derivation of critical race theory. It's a derivation of Marxism, right, yeah. And it's fascinating, and it might inform your work at the Southern Evangelical Seminary. Again, it's Epic TV, and it's Yanya Kellick's American Thought Leaders interview with James Lindsay and his co-author, whose name doesn't strike me at the moment.
If we could just get James Lindsay to be a person of faith, he would be right at home. He's getting close, but he's not there yet.
I know a really good joke about a guy who sent a Jewish fellow who sent his son to Israel and came back a Christian. The punchline is very good, but it's too long to get there. Anyway, the upshot is that they pray to God, and God responds, "I'd like to help you, but I sent my son to Israel." And anyway,
well, you know, Charles, the closest thing to the truth is a Messianic Jew. I mean, that's
don't start. Messianic and Jew don't go in the same sentence. If you're Messianic, you're a Christian. You're not Jewish, even if you celebrate Jewish holidays. Let's not have an argument. Objectively,
Jesus was a Jew himself. So
yes,
here we go.
Objectively, the U.S. Constitution and the laws that flow from it are rooted in Judeo-Christian ethics and, of course, Scripture, which is what you just referred to and made me think of it. Why are some segments of society in the U.S. trying so hard to separate us from those principles that you just referred to earlier?
Because it is the strongest bulwark against what they're trying to do. With the seepage of Marxism coming in the way that it is, the goal is chaos. And you know, our God is a God of order. The Judeo-Christian God is a God of order. That was obviously brought into the way our government was formed. And so when you see anarchy occurring, it is an attempt by those who would destroy America to create such confusion that we lose sight and lose our compass and lose our an understanding of where we are and who we are. And once they accomplish that, then here's where we're headed. We're headed toward, the revolution has already started in our country. It was started some years ago by those who would destroy America. And so there is a coming counter-revolution. And I think that's really what they're trying to do. They're trying to get us to react violently in some way. And once they do that, then they will use that to further defeat us.
Cancellation, yeah.
Yeah. The problem with that is that it's the same scenario that was played out in Nazi Germany or in pre-Nazi Germany. And what happened was that you had the far left, which was communist, and you had the far right, which was Nazis, and they were competing for the heart of Germany. And the far right won, but ultimately they're both socialist. I mean, the end result's the same, whether it's fascism or whether it's communism. It doesn't matter. You lose your freedom under those circumstances.
Right. It's still the state controlling you one way or the other.
I was interested, Charles, let me mention one thing. I was interested in your introduction there with President Reagan, who was talking about too much power being concentrated in the presidency.
Right.
And I agree wholeheartedly with that. But let me take you one step further that President Reagan did didn't even see. We now have power concentrated in a presidency that is being controlled by those who have not been elected by the people.
Right, bureaucracy.
Now, well, it's more than that. We have a president that doesn't even know what planet he's in. And there are nebulous characters or characters in the wings running our country that have not been elected. And it's frightening to me.
Yeah. And may the nebula be defeated.
Absolutely.
Yeah. On that pleasant note, we're at the bottom of the hour, so let's go. Assuming I can possibly even find the break structure that I've been...
Now that everybody's encouraged, we'll go to break.
Yeah. This meditation brought to you by the Church of Depression, right? How do we get here? All right, hang on 1 second.
I'm not sure. You're the one that invited me, Charles.
Yeah, it's back to that responsibility thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's your fault.
All right. Yeah, I'm responsible. Of course, the next chant, of course, is, I'm not worthy. All right. what is the thing in Monty Python? Omni Padme Om. Whack! Hit myself on the head with a board. All right, stand by.
Thank you for listening to Liberty Watch.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop.
Bunker is so funny. Is he married?
Bunker, call back.
It's Bunker, and I'm single, and I'm looking for a rich widow with a large ranch.
I've never even been on online dating. I believe in meeting people the old-fashioned way, alcohol and bad judgment.
She sounds like your type, Bunker.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Blessed is the spot, and the house, and the place, and the meadow, where mention of God hath been made, and his praise glorified.
Welcome back to Liberty Watch, the second segment. The third segment. And I can count. And with Judge Phil Ginn of the Southern Evangelical Seminary and also a small cemetery, the seminary, and forgot to use Polygrip today. And he is also a retired judge from North Carolina. And a successful retired businessman. And by the way, I don't know if you recognize the voices in that music, but that was actually Seals and Crofts. But it is their children. It is Juliet Seals and Amelia Croft. Their daughters that are actually singing. And they have an inspirational album. And I don't think it's completely Christian, but it is inspirational. So,
well, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
Anything that can move the ball a little bit forward compared to what some of our children are listening to.
Yeah. If we have a caller, Gary, from Bisbee, who always has an interesting perspective. So I'm going to put him on, and then I have a question about the struggle between good and evil. Gary, go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you for having – thank you, Judge Ginn. I went to seminary and got a master's with a concentration on apologetics, and nobody is more humble but more powerful than Norman Geisler. And my question for you, do you think that your training in apologetics gave you a stronger critical thinking skills to be a judge?
Oh, absolutely. Gary, absolutely. In fact, if you go and talk to some of our graduates, our current students, myself being a graduate, incidentally, I'm the first graduate of SES to be a president of SES. But one of the things that runs through every conversation with our folks is that they will tell you, that's where I learned to think. And thinking biblically, thinking based on natural law, thinking practically about anything, not only theology, but the world in general, is something that we're very high on at our place. At the first class I took, Norm Geisler signed me up for all these classes. First class I took, we looked at cultural issues, And then we had to go to the Bible to determine what the Bible had to say about that cultural issue. And then we had to defend the biblical position on that current issue without ever quoting the Bible. And that did a lot for me. One of my goals in going to the seminary, confessionally, was to have my mind wrap around what my heart wanted to believe. And I would expect that your apologetic training helped you do that, too. And that's one of the great benefits of apologetics. So it's more than just saying, well, the Bible tells me so. We have the ability to go back even to absolute truth and to determine that there's an absolute truth, that we can give good reasons for the existence of God all the way through to Jesus and back it up with facts. And as Norm Geisler used to say, it makes your faith a step into the light as opposed to a leap in the darkness. Everybody believes something. Everybody has a religion. Even those who say they don't have a religion in the, what was it, blood, sweat, and tears said, I swear there ain't no heaven and I pray there ain't no hell.
But only my dying will tell. Only my dying will tell. Yeah.
And the mistake they made was they said it's crazy cold down there, but they may be surprised by that.
Yeah, Cervantes had a different opinion. And was it Cervantes who wrote to... No, I'm wrong. Somebody else. Rick, you're trying to tell me.
Dante.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't have his microphone on, but Bunker wants that. Oh, Gary, do you want to redirect, or is there...
Did that answer your question, Gary?
Yes, sir, and I really thank you for being on the show today.
Cool.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming on and asking the question.
Bunker, you had a follow-up.
Yeah, Judge, in my multi-readings of scriptures... Two scriptures stood out for me that have been more or less the guidepost of my life. The first one is in the natural Pontius Pilate asking, what is truth? And the other, which is in a separate portion of the scripture, is Christ saying, the truth will set you free. And to me, that's always said, to be free, you have to ask questions. And that is my interpretation.
Absolutely, Bunker. I don't really know that a faith is worth having if it hasn't been a questioned faith. And I don't mean to detract from people who come to faith very early and they never have any doubts. That wasn't me. I had doubts that arose that were pretty daunting. We've actually, you know, there's one aspect of seminary training that a lot of people don't want and perhaps they don't even need. That academic side. We, though, have started at Southern Evangelical Seminary another endeavor that we've called Truth That Matters, and that is to bring this kind of practical Christian training down to the church and to the family, and basically the church and the family, faith and family, if you want to look at it that way, is what's under attack from demonic forces right now, and that's where we need to offer the protection for our nation is at that level. If I can just go back and statistic after statistic, you know, when you emaciate the male of the species, you basically start killing the species away. And that's what we're doing in this nation. And I can tell you from my own history as a judge, 80-85% of the kids who came in court before me.
Single family.
Came from a fatherless home.
Yep.
And if there's anybody that's failed in this nation, it is the males. And I'm saddened by that.
Phil, did that do it for you, Bunker?
That's wonderful.
Right, good. Anybody else in there want to ask something? Rick. All right, hold on. Let me figure out which microphone you're on. I think I got to go ahead, Rick.
Hi. I'm also well-versed in apologetics, but that's mainly because I'm constantly screwing everything up.
Blame it on Charles.
Yeah,
it's all his fault.
I'm not worthy.
I'm always having to apologize. You mentioned Nazi Germany earlier, and you may have covered this. I was not listening at the very first part. I was otherwise engaged. Does the psychosis of the 30s and the 40s in Germany, of the German people, does it bear a relation, do you think, to what we see on the campus and the psychosis of these students when I hear them speak? And they're protesting and their support of Hamas and their hatred for Israel and their hatred for Western culture and their hatred for the patriarchy and their hatred for everything that made this a successful country. Their hatred for everything that made the United States good and strong and prosperous and provided for them a good life enough to send them to a $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year college.
Okay, Rick, let him answer because we're running out of time. Go ahead.
Hey, it's going to be a long answer, Charles.
You got two and a half minutes to the break.
Okay, a couple of things that I would say to you is that the one difference right now that we see between what happened in Nazi Germany and in America has been up until now the strength of our economy. It was the economy that ultimately drove the counter-revolutions going back and forth and the fighting in Germany. And the reason that the right-wing fascists won is that they had the guns. The communists didn't. The fascists had the gun, had bigger and better guns. But at any rate, that's the difference. I'm going to wait till after the break to dig in on some of the issues with the kids on the campuses because it goes further than that. But you are correct, Rick, in that it has a great correlation between what occurred then and what's occurring now.
Hmm. It occurs to me this is going to take more than an hour. Can you stay past the hour that you get that you originally granted, or are you committed to something else?
No, but I'll come back.
Okay, good. Then we'll try and keep the answers as concise as possible when we get back to the fourth segment, and now that I finally learned to count to four, and with retired Judge Phil Ginn and president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary, and we'll be right back after this.
This is Dennis Weaver, and you're listening to Liberty Watch. You know, the exchange of ideas is so important to maintain our freedom in this country. And Liberty Watch is a show that promotes freedom.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track. Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Earth to JD, did you disappear on me? He's calling on the next line.
Hey, how about now?
There's a specific phrase we use to get the caller back.
Give my caller life!
And look at that, he's back.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
This great country of ours is in a heck of a shape. And don't let your heart be troubled. We've got the rotten man working for us. So pull out your Bible, blow up the dust. We need to pray to the Lord.
Indeed we do, and talking about that with us is Judge Phil Ginn, retired Judge Phil Ginn, president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. I thought the music would kind of match along with the interview. So.
Okay, Charles, I'm convinced sitting here that I need to move to Tucson. There's a lot going on out there that I'm interested in, so I at least need to come and visit. If you don't mind, before we go to the next question, let me go back to Rick's because I didn't really answer fully the question. Very quickly, these folks are ignorant on college campuses, and they're ignorant because they haven't been taught the basics of education. They've been taught a bunch of gobbledygook of things like victimization, that they're victims, and you go and you look at who's there, and you've got all of these outside agitators that come in with facial recognition. They're even seeing folks who were present at Occupy Wall Street now coming onto the campuses. And these kids don't have a focal point. They don't have a compass. They don't have a basis to understand what's wrong or what's right or what's true or what's not true. And this was, I can't even remember the guy that was doing it, but I saw a video of this guy walking around talking to them, asking them, like, when you say river to the sea, what river and what sea?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, they don't know. And I want to disagree with you a little bit, Phil. I don't think that they don't have a focal point. I think their focal point is one thing and one thing only. There's their focal point. No, it is. It's, I'm upset.
It is a, our whole system is built on belief in something bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is the nation of America or whether it's God or what it is, these people can't get outside of their own skins. Mm-hmm. And you come up with signs like queers for Hamas. I mean,
oh boy, what would happen? Let's send them over.
That's like the chicken. That's like chickens holding up a banner that says chickens for KFC. You know,
right.
It's
for the cause, you know.
And they don't have anything in between their ears. That's what I was going to say. I'm not sure that answers Rick's question, but it did give me a chance to vent a little bit.
Yeah. Mark, who is a history teacher, is in studio with us. Mark has a question for you. Mark, go ahead.
Yes. Thanks, Charles. And by the way, I'm an
Engineering science, physics,
teacher, not a
STEM
history.
Teacher. Right, yeah. Yeah, so,
shut up, Charles.
Anyway, so I spent quite a bit of time in Bavaria. Went to high school there for a year and a quarter.
Yeah, all his Japanese cars have BMW logos.
Yeah. Anyway, so I disagree with the people thinking or the saying that the Nazis were far rightist. They're just another stripe of
Phil covered that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. In modern language, you'd have the far left as communist, far right as fascism. That's the way it looks, but it's all the same thing.
It's just two different limbs of the same side of the tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all autocratic government in the bottom line, and it's run by elite, no middle class, and a subservient class of people underneath a small number of elites.
The nomenclatura.
That's what they're wanted to head to. That's what they're wanted to head to in our country.
Right,
Mark, I have no issue with what you're saying at all.
All right, and that answers that, and I think it does anyway. Does it, Mark?
Yes, it does. It's the leftist, Marxist, Englist, Leninist, Stalinist, National Socialist that want people to think that Nazis were on the far right.
Yeah.
Briefly,
I agree with you.
You wrote an interesting article, Phil, that you sent to me about what fundamental teachings modern Christians are getting wrong. I realize we don't have a lot of time, and you're going to stay for one more segment after the top. We've got 8 minutes to the top of the hour. What do you believe are some of the fundamental teachings that modern Christians are getting wrong?
Well, we've strayed from the Bible, first of all, biblical teachings, and we have let the culture infiltrate the basic concepts of our faith. And it's not just evangelical Christians, it's Judaism, it's even Islam that has been affected by this. And my thoughts really emanated. George Barner does a lot of research, and he does every year kind of the fate of Christianity. That's really what he studies. And those came out probably mid-February sometime. I just got my hands on them. I hadn't been looking for them. I should have been looking for them, but I got my hands on them a couple of weeks ago. And one of the startling statistics out of that is less than 6% of Christians in America actually have a biblical worldview. And so I don't know how you can be a Christian without a biblical worldview, but perhaps you can. And those are startling facts. And what I basically said in that article was that it's the church's fault. We've not been, our education system hasn't been teaching our children, but our churches have not. They've been bent too much on creating wealth within the church, keeping Christianity within stained glass windows. That's not what it was made for. And when you see people suffering for their faith out there, there's no question in their faith what they're dying for and what they're being persecuted for. But yet here in our luxury in America, we've got all these doubts that are just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. I can speak from my side of the aisle is that a lot of Jewish people have adopted socialism as their religion more than Judaism.
Sure.
It's just a variant, which is highly unfortunate. I say that as a member of the tribe. I'm not being anti-Semitic. So
I've labeled, forgive me, I'm pretty good at making people on all sides mad at me eventually.
Uh-huh.
But I've coined a new phrase called trans-Christians, those who are self-identifying as Christians. It's sad because that's not what Christianity is all about. You can't just mix and mingle anything that you want and make some gobbledygook of things that don't make sense. Barna showed that I think right at 50% of folks in America believe that a Messiah is coming at some point in time that's otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the vast majority of those people don't think there's enough evidence to show that there is even a God. I mean,
well,
figure.
I think a lot of them might think it's E.T. By the way, NASA formed a study committee and figured a way for E.T. to phone home. And when they tried the system, it went straight to voicemail. So. Studies by George Bama that you were referring to show that systems steeped in tradition can be modified over time by the adoption of different thought patterns that become almost unrecognizable from the original version of they were. And even people's most cherished beliefs can kind of fall prey to sort of insipid assaults based on small modifications over time. And as it applies to religious context, this concept allows for an inclusive, enthusiasm-mind approach to the tenets of their faiths. With love and respect, I have to ask you, isn't that kind of how Christianity evolved out of Judaism?
To some extent, although Christianity quickly moved away from that into what would be called the Gentile population.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, it's a little bit different in that Christianity did become a sect of Judaism, but very quickly broke off of Judaism and mm-hmm. became persecuted by Judaism and by the Romans as something less than true. So that's a little bit different than what we're talking about here. We say it up in the mountains of Western North Carolina. You want everybody, all the pimps, the prostitutes, the sinners, to come to church the first Sunday they get there, but darned if you want them to sing in the choir. and it's a situation where, as in terms of salvation, it's not that Christ accepts us the way we are. Christ accepts us despite the way we are. And it's his desire to change us to be more like him. Well, this new concept within Christianity and within other organizations dates back even, I guess, to the 70s, this I'm okay, you're okay.
Right.
Truth is relative. And so what's true for me may not be true for you. And so we get away from good philosophy.
Right.
We get away from the basis of good philosophy in trying to do so. And that's, I guess, my point in that regard. But I do think it's a little bit different from Christianity and Judaism. Sure.
I'll stay right there at that definition. And let's say this is top of the hour. And welcome back to America Armed and Free with Judge Phil Ginn. Tired. He's agreed to stay on one more segment, so we're going to get right to it. And that is, you said that as a quote, as a Christian with a decidedly biblical worldview, I believe there are ample spiritual reasons to be supportive of Israel. Also based on those same beliefs, I have grave concerns for any nation or any people who oppose the right of Israel to survive as a nation. At the same time, there are also valid political and practical reasons to support the Jewish people in their own state, unquote. What are some of those practical reasons?
Very practical reasons. Number one, they are our closest allies. They are a democracy in the middle of autocratic governments. That's first and foremost. They have been faithful to us. That's the second thing. Number three, they are our greatest protection against Iran and its minions of destruction, which I named in those included but not limited to folks like the Houthis and the Hamas and all of those other folks that are really kind of not our friends. They have sworn to eradicate us from the face of the earth, and yet we are supporting them by pacifying them in opposition to supporting Israel. And that makes absolutely no sense for us as a nation.
What do you make of those people who bring up the argument about the terrible mistake Israel made with the USS Liberty some 50 years ago?
That's 50 years ago. Number one, what do they make of the revolution in Iran in 1978? That's when the Shah was overthrown and the Ayatollah came in. And, I mean, is Israel perfect? Absolutely not. They're not perfect.
Neither are we.
Neither are we. But they're the closest friends we have over there in an area where we desperately need friends. And if on top of that, they are checks and balances for that crowd over there. Israel mm-hmm. takes the blows that would be directed toward America if they weren't there.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something. Do you have any friends that have done some kind of bad things over the years?
One or two. And you know, there are rumors that I might have been involved in bad things. Frankly, you know, the statute of limitations has run on most of my youthful indiscretions.
Yeah, mine too. So let me ask you, if they're not perfect, why are they still your friends?
For various and sundry reasons, mainly of which, by and large, we know they have our back.
Hmm. Okay, we have caller Paul that wants to ask you something. Paul, would you like to be on the air with Judge Ginn?
Yes, please.
Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, when I went to U of A, three of my roommates were studying to be Lutheran ministers, which they became, and a couple of them were evangelicals. And I think he's being disingenuous about the evangelicals' position.
In what way?
Israel. Well, because the whole point of this new state of Israel is for them to be converted to Christianity.
What?
And that's evangelical.
No.
Go ahead, Phil.
I think you're misnomering, at least me. I certainly want the whole world to be converted to Christianity. Don't get me wrong about that. But my point in writing this article was that my understanding of the end times is not predicated in regard to a secular decision by the American government to support an ally who is there. Who's, in fact, the whole thing was built more on practical application of the need for America to have Israel as a friend and support Israel as opposed to our bitter enemies. And we're basically, when we are trying to curtail Israel in defending herself and pacifying Iran and all of these other people, we are doing great harm to our standing in the world and great harm to our security as a people.
Paul, did that answer your challenge?
But that great harm's already been done. But just quickly, one last thing.
Okay.
I'm using AI now, different models. And so that's like a supercharged search engine. And I keep posing to it, give me non-biblical evidence of the Israelites being slaves in Egypt, and they can't come up with it.
Of course not, because of who programmed the AI. Call somebody else, will you? All right, Phil, don't even dignify that with an answer. You know, you wrote this article that I was referring to earlier about Dance with the One Who Brung You. And I suspect this is about all we're going to have time for. Well, actually, I'm going to go somewhere else. I want to talk about nihilism. And George Bama discovered that millions of Americans, you referred to this earlier, accept worldview perspectives from several additional yet contradictory life philosophies such as Marxism, nihilism. I never know whether to call it nihilism or nihilism, but and Islam. Never mind Islam, but how in the world could Marxism, and especially nihilism or nihilism, ever be compatible with Christianity?
It can't be. They're diametrically opposed to one another. And that's what, there's a word that sociologists, the word there for a minute, Charles. The word that sociologists and psychologists, whatever ologist you want here, uses the word syncretism.
Uh-huh. But not proctologists.
But well, maybe I don't know. But it's this concept that brackish water or poisonous water or contaminated water seeps into a fresh water supply and thereby slowly but surely ruins the fresh water supply. And that's what syncretism. And sometimes these things can be diametrically opposed to one another. And essentially, in order to believe Marxism and Christianity, you got to understand these things are diametrically opposed. You see these little bumper stickers on cars sometimes coexist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we can, in one sense, get along together, but there's no way that we can assimilate and have a one world religion without giving up the tenets, the basic tenets of our faith and meshing it into an overused word, gobbledygook. Of myth that has no philosophical basis, has no spiritual basis, has no practical basis.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we believe it because we don't have the abilities and the training and the education and the wherewithal to understand that there is an absolute truth and two opposites. The second law of logic says that opposites cannot both
coexist.
Be true at the same time in the same circumstance.
Right. My father's working definition of nihilism consisted of the phrase, why be difficult when with just a little bit more effort you could be impossible? But I digress. Rick, did you have a quick question you wanted?
Yeah, I was driving by the University of Arizona and I saw probably a student or a tenured professor, I saw the coexist bumper sticker on one side and then on the other side of the bumper, from the river to the sea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, this is brought to you by the Foundation for Chaste Fornication.
Charles, there's something that's been on my mind since we started, and I looked it up on AI. No, I did pull it up on it. I did pull it up on the internet while we were talking here, and it's an old hymn. And I just want to quote you part of it,
mm-hmm.
because I think it's so important to our nation right now. And you don't hear this hymn anymore. I wish we would sing it. It's a beautiful hymn.
Mm-hmm.
Go something. There are four verses of it. Once to every man and nation comes the moment to decide in the strife of truth with falsehood for the good or evil side. some great cause, God's new Messiah, offering each the bloom or blight, and the choice goes by forever. Twist that darkness in that light. Then to side with truth is noble when we share her wretched crust. Ere her cause brings fame and profit and is prosperous to be just, then it is the brave man chooses while the coward stands aside till the multitude make virtue of the faith they had denied. Though the cause of evil prosper, yet 'tis truth alone is strong. Though her portion be the scaffold and upon the throne be wrong, yet that scaffold sways the future, and behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own.
Wow.
Not decide is to decide. America, Christians can no longer go down the middle of the road. What we're going to find out is there's an old saying in the mountains of North Carolina, again, there's a lot of dead flat squirrels in the middle of the road that couldn't make up their mind. And some clear decisions are going to have to be made. It's going to have to be for the good or for the ill, for truth, for a lie. Because if you fail to make that decision, if you fail to make that commitment, then you are committed to the wrong. If I was to leave any message with your listeners today, other than to be sure to check out ses.edu and truthitmatters.org, that would be the message that I would leave with them.
Right. Do the websites one more time again, please.
Okay, it's ses.edu and truthitmatters.org. But if you go on ses.edu, there's a link straight into Truth That Matters.
Mm-hmm. And Bunker had one final follow-up. Go ahead.
A lot of wisdom shared today, and I think I would like to bring a moment of dumb to the program. And that is, has anyone ever thought of asking AI if AI was God? And what would it answer?
Well, I can tell you one thing. It'll sure get you in trouble with plagiarism if you're not careful.
Yeah.
We use AI, but I don't put a lot of faith in it. I really don't.
Hey, it's no better than the programming on Google.
Well, and I agree with that, but how in the world have we come to the place where we're depending even on something like the United States Supreme Court to determine our morality? I mean, it's all screwed up, guys.
Well,
that's determined at home.
Five of the Ten Commandments are up on their wall.
Yeah. But,
of course, they leave out the one about adultery, but I digress.
The reality is this, guys. It's not too late, but our time is short. We can no longer dilly-dally on the sidelines. We've got to get into the game as people of faith, as good Americans, as Christians, to represent even our faith. You don't have to be a Christian to be a good American, but I would dare say that you need to be a person of strong faith in some being higher than yourself in order to be a good citizen of this country. I'm sorry, but that's the way it was created in this nation. And I will further say that how we interpret our Constitution ought to be like how good Christians ought to interpret the Bible. The Bible to our faith is center. Constitution is center to our nation. And so we've got to get back to get rid of this living, breathing, gobbledygook of mess. I use that word again, but that's kind of what I think about some of the things that's going on in the culture anyway.
It's a North Carolina technical term.
Absolutely.
Yep.
It means a mess. As we used to say, it's a mell of a hess.
Yep. Right. And the snake didn't have a pit to hiss in. All right. I will.
There you go.
You are a lamp onto our feet, Phil Ginn, and
I appreciate
your
time. Let's do this again. I had a great time, guys. I really did. We'll
Me
do
too.
It again.
We got to assemble the cast of characters here in the studio, too, in order to have sort of a round robin. Because one of the things, it's like callers, they think of great questions because they're outside the sphere of the interview, and they think of things from an external perspective that a host won't, which is why it's so good to have a live program for call-ins.
Well, I don't even mind if Paul calls back. I doubt he will, but I don't mind if he does.
I don't want people who are acolytes. I want people who challenge. They're the ones who make us better. All right. You have a blessed day.
Thank you, sir. Y'all take care. God bless you.
Thank you, Judge.